potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Freaky, Fat Man, Echo Boomers, Chick Fight, and The Climb. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Brides of Dracula and Bill and Ted Face the Music. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
There's been a little bit of a bump in hope, I guess you can say, by AMC Theaters and Cinemark when there was an announcement, I believe it was on Monday, that Pfizer had a coronavirus vaccine that's 90% effective, or reportedly 90% effective. They are hoping to have that thing out and ready to go early next year, earlier in 2021. And that, of course, gave a lot of people hope because they're like, oh, maybe, you know, we can come to an end to this, you know, right as all these coronavirus cases are surging all over the country. AMC has been devastated by the closures. And even though they're open, a lot of the movie theaters are open, they're not open to capacity, and Hollywood's not dropping the big movies in there. We've talked about this before. It's a chicken or the egg thing. They don't want to put big movies out in theaters if people aren't going to go see them and the movies aren't going to be able to open up to full capacity and make money at it and be profitable by selling concessions until this is all taken care of and people are comfortable coming back. This was a nice little bump that AMC needed, mainly because their stock took a little bit of a tumble earlier, a week or two ago, when they were saying they're running out of money. They are projecting that AMC is going to run through its coffers by early 2021. And what's interesting, that got me to look at the stock price of AMC. It's been an up and down battle for AMC, for theaters, and it's always been, you know, it hasn't just been this steady going like gangbusters for a long time. There was this up and down, and you go back and 3-4 years ago, it took a tumble long before the pandemic happened. A couple of years ago, theaters took a bit of a hit, and I think part of that is the home cinema experience getting better and the more options online. And then, of course, that really came to a head and was noticeable back in March and April and throughout the summer when the coronavirus really took hold. You had all the stay-at-home orders and the closure orders. But there's a little bit of hope and there's a little bit of a recovery in the stock here. You know, let's just hope that the coronavirus vaccine comes through quick enough for these theaters to survive, because they've already closed several theaters around the country permanently. And you do have to realize there's still hoops to jump through for this vaccine. I mean, there's still some things that you have to be put together, and then they're going to have to roll it out to healthcare people first and then high-risk people. So hopefully by next summer, things will get somewhat back to normal. The next piece of news that at least is dominating the film journalism side is Johnny Depp has been let go of the Fantastic Beasts franchise. As I understand it, he was asked to resign. He still gets paid for this third movie. That's in his contract, but they're going to recast. And the reason for this is because of a lawsuit he filed in the UK where a newspaper, a tabloid, had referred to him as a wife beater. And this is all based on the testimony and charges and accusations from Amber Heard during all of their tumultuous marriage breakup. And they're trading jabs back and forth. They're trading stories about, oh, she did this to me, he did this to me. And this tabloid referred to him as a white beater, and he sued. And the judge basically said, well, they're reporting what seems accurate based on what's in the news. Now, look, I have no skin in the game. I don't know Johnny Depp. I don't care about Johnny Depp. The whole case to me sounds like it's two crazy people who got married. And when you look at some of the reports that are coming out from the court, you know, there was like possibly drugs involved and alcohol, and they were fighting and throwing things. And allegedly there were personal attacks to each other that were violent. Things were being thrown and people were being injured. And then people were claiming to be injured and maybe not injured. And this has caused a bit of a controversy for movie fans because they're saying, okay, fine, if you're going to cut Johnny Depp loose from the Fantastic Beasts series, you should also, Warner Brothers, get rid of Amber Heard, who's in Aquaman 2 and allegedly being involved in the reshoots for Justice League. As I understand it, probably what Warner Brothers is doing is because of this lawsuit. It was a defamation of character lawsuit in the UK that Depp filed against the newspaper, whatever, The Sun or something like that. Because there was a ruling on that, they said, okay, we kind of now have court records that say we can refer to you as a wife beater, so we're not going to have that associated. There's no gavel hitting down saying, yes, it's legal to call Amber Heard an abuser. Since there's no ruling on that, and she hasn't filed suit against anybody, I have a feeling it's not because of the divorce proceedings and all of that. It's the fact that he basically got a judge to say, hey, no, people can refer to you as a wife beater. And that's the danger in this world of litigating things, is sometimes things come out the way you don't want them to, and that will affect you later on. My guess, having read up on this situation, is they're both crazy. And I mean that in a non-binding, non-legal sense. It's just, they sound like they're both kind of bonkers people. And we already knew that about Johnny Depp. He's a little weird anyways. I don't know him personally. I don't know what he's like personally. And apparently Amber Heard is just as goofy. You take very attractive people, you give them a lot of money, you're going to get some weird behavior. So, Johnny Depp's out of Fantastic Beasts, and there's a petition to get Amber Heard kicked out of Aquaman, but I don't expect to see that. Plus, I don't think anyone's watching the Aquaman movies for Amber Heard. I mean, they're talking about having Mads Mikkelsen replace Johnny Depp in Fantastic Beasts. I think they should also get Mads Mikkelsen to replace Amber Heard in Aquaman 2, but that's just me. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is called Wolfwalkers. It's in theaters actually this weekend and then on Apple TV on December 10th.
You can come out now. You're a wolfwalker. I met a girl in the forest. Who has magic powers. When she sleeps, she turns into a wolf. She's a wolf walker. Something's happened to me. Be a wolf!
This is from Cartoon Saloon, which is best known. It's an Irish group, and they did Song of the Sea and The Secret of the Kells, which are these beautiful hand-carved looking animation movies. And this is very similar. It takes Irish folklore and it adds some like a nature element to it. You know, in the Song of the Sea, it was about a Selkie, and in Secret of the Kells, it was about like fairies in the woods. This one's about wolves, humans that turn into wolves and shift back and forth. And this is one you're going to want to watch as we go into award season. The next trailer I want to hit is Hillbilly Elegy, which is on Netflix on November 24th.
I've been doing real good. I just had a down month.
I got an interview tomorrow, Mom. Otherwise, I...
Oh, you know me. I always land on my feet.
You let her get away with this every time.
I told you that I would do better.
You always say that. You're lying.
I always try.
You got to think about these kids.
What do you think I've been thinking about since I was 18 years old, huh? Never had a life where I wasn't thinking about the kids.
Do you actually want to be dead, Mom? Or are you just too lazy to try?
This is directed by Ron Howard. It's already getting raked over the coals by reviewers because I think it's getting a limited theatrical run starting this week. But it's a meant to be award bait for people like Glenn Close and Amy Adams. We'll see. I'll talk about this in a couple weeks when it has its Netflix debut. But if you want to kind of catch up early on some of these potential award films, those are two of the trailers out there. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Fat Man and Echo Boomers.
Ooh.
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Fat Man. No, this is not a documentary about me and my movie-going habits or my eating habits. No, this is something I covered on the Trailer Park a couple weeks ago, and it stars Mel Gibson as a crotchety version of Santa Claus fighting an assassin sent to him by an entitled 12-year-old who got coal under the tree.
The United States military would like to procure your services.
This is a one-time deal, gentlemen. How are you, Mike? Nicole and the kids are well, I hope.
Where are you?
You just lost a big son!
What's the job?
I'd like you to kill Santa Claus.
What's the purpose of your visit?
Hunting. I'm going to kill some things.
For the last several years, Mel Gibson has been trying to rebrand himself. He's older now, so he's going for the older roles. He's not doing the young, you know, he's doing Martin Riggs. You know, he's not like the guy who just came out of Vietnam 10 years ago. He's doing, you know, older roles and, you know, he's in the Daddy's Home movies. So Fat Man is his latest edition, and that is him as Santa Claus and actually as Kris Kringle. This is one of those where they characterize Santa Claus not as this jolly old elf living on the in the North Pole. They characterize him as this grumpy old man, essentially, and he lives in Alaska, so he's close to the North Pole, but it's a little bit more of a pragmatic, less magical version of Santa. He has elves who work for him, he has reindeer, and he has a sleigh, but it's a lot different than, like, the Santa Claus with Tim Allen, and that gives him a chance to be grumpy and gritty, and there is something still magical about him because he does have certain powers. He has the Santa Claus powers. But he's a little bit more realistically pragmatic. This is essentially like a Rambo movie where he has to defend his homestead against this targeted assassin. And, you know, the characters you're dealing with aside from him, and he's down on his luck because there's not as many good kids in the world. And so the U.S. government, they hire him to have his, in January, have the elves work on some military contract. And it's a one kind of deal for him, but he's got all these people at his homestead in Alaska, which is then he has to defend against this assassin coming in. And Walton Goggins plays the assassin, who's had a beef with Santa Claus ever since he was a kid. And it goes back to toys or presents he did or did not get. And once again, the force that starts this is this entitled, trust fund laden, rich kid who is more interested in walking around in a business suit and playing businessman than he is to play Little League. And he's 12 and he's gotten coal in his stocking and he's going after Santa Claus because he's offended and PO'd. And this is the kind of kid who, like in one scene, he hires his hitman to intimidate the science fair winner to say she cheated so he could get the first prize. That's the kind of person this kid is. So he's the bad guy. He is the Lex Luthor type in this movie, but his blunt instrument is played by Walton Goggins, who's this assassin who has no real charm or heart or anything like that. And I love Walton Goggins, and he does a great job in this movie, just taking it as seriously as he can and just being this formidable opponent going after Santa Claus. And then, of course, Mel Gibson defending his own homestead against this guy. It's like I said, it's like a Rambo movie, only it's a Christmas Rambo movie, but it's violent and it's absurd and it's over the top. And I had a blast. It reminds me to a degree. I mean, not in the story, but in the spirit of something like Rare Exports. If you've ever seen Rare Exports, it's a Finnish movie and it is about this kid who finds, and this father and son, they find what they think is a Santa Claus on their property. And it has a real dark edge to it, dealing with a lot of the legends and ideas and concept of Santa Claus, and it turns it on its ear. And this one, although it's a totally different story, it kind of does the same thing. And I had a lot of fun watching it. I know it's going to offend some people, and it's not for the kids. It's R-rated. And, you know, the subject matter is not appropriate. But I enjoyed the heck out of it. So Fat Man is in theaters this weekend, if you can check your local listings. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Echo Boomers, also available in theaters this week. a group of millennials engaged in an high-end art theft in retaliation against rich boomers and the top 1%.
I got a nice job. It's just a startup, but I think you'd be perfect for it.
What's the business?
Throw this on before you get out.
They would steal anything of value and then just destroy the rest for fun. And Mel Donnelly is how they made money.
You add someone without asking me and bring them to my place of business?
I didn't see anything.
Oh, yeah, you did. You say one word to anyone.
This one has some interesting names attached to it. One of them is Patrick Schwarzenegger, not Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is Patrick Schwarzenegger's son, who I don't think looks anything like. I mean, you can kind of sort of see it in the smile and the eyes, but otherwise he does not embody his father's presence on screen. He's not a bodybuilder, so he's not ripped. You know, it's not like when you watched The Terminator or Conan way back in the day. It also stars Michael Shannon as, well, he's the fence. He's the guy who organizes the jobs and tells them where to go and how to get the art and what he's expecting, and then he sells it and gives them a cut. This puts at the centerpiece essentially the online fight between baby boomers and millennials and how they just hate each other and how baby boomers blame millennials for the state of the country and how they're lazy and how they're entitled and how they're snowflakes and that. And then it's on the same time, you've got the millennials blaming the baby boomers for the state of the country, for destroying the housing market and changing the way healthcare and jobs work and job security and living in a different world than we were in the 50s. And it is kind of funny in that respect because I'm Gen X, so I'm one of those people who just watches the boomers and the millennials fight and just kind of laugh at them. But Echo Boomers is also just meant to be about somebody lashing out against the 1%. And look, I get that. I find it a little absurd that the people making the movie, like Arnold Schwarzenegger's son, is taking part in a movie that's vilifying the 1%, of which his family is clearly part of. But my biggest problem with the movie, there's two big problems with this movie. The first one is the narration gets on my nerves because it's told in retrospect while this character's in prison and he's being interviewed. So it's all done via narration, which is just lazy. It's one thing to throw it in there now and then to kind of kick off a story. But when you have somebody narrating it like it's a freaking episode of Grey's Anatomy, that's just lazy writing. Show what's going on. You don't need the narration. And then when you got somebody who's kind of bland like Patrick Schwarzenegger, narrating the whole thing is just kind of a lame thing to do. Also, the movie doesn't understand itself. Like there's a scene where when they rob the houses, they put on these masks and they're skeleton masks adorned with the Day of the Dead symbols. And they're like, oh, they dress up as death because of blah. And I'm like, you don't understand the Day of the Dead, do you? You don't understand the cultural context and what those symbols, that's not just dead bodies. It's not like a skeleton mask that you have on from the Silver Shamrock Company. It's about rebirth. It's about life. It's those symbols are more about life than they are about death. So they get a lot of stuff wrong. But then also, I hated all the characters. I've said this so many times. If I don't like the characters, I generally don't like the movie. I couldn't get behind anybody. I thought they were all kind of just boring, awful people. So I'm going to have to say that Echo Boomers kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Freaky and The Climb. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Freaky. Let's get freaky, people. A brutal serial killer stalks high school students but ends up switching bodies with one of the victims.
Honestly, if this was a horror movie, I'd be one of the first ones to get killed.
Cue the creepy dude in the mask.
But actually, it turns out...
Where am I?
I didn't get killed.
Oh my God, why do I sound like that?
I woke up in the killer's body.
The Blissfield Butcher strikes again.
It's a slaughterhouse.
I have like less than 6 hours to swap back or I'm going to be stuck in this body forever.
This is done by the people who did Happy Death Day. One of the things that made Happy Death Day work is it took a very basic slasher story. And it added this little twist to it. In that movie, it was a Groundhog's Day kind of twist where the victim keeps time looping back to that morning. Now, they did Happy Death Day to You, which didn't make as much money because it swerved much closer to a science fiction angle than it was to a horror movie angle. And so I think there are a lot of fans who just are strict horror movie fans that were like, okay, now you're dipping into sci-fi. And, you know, if I want to go see that, I'll go see a Marvel movie. But still, I thought it was a great little twist on the slasher genre. And, you know, slashers have been around since, let's just say, the 80s. I know Halloween came out in 1978 and Psycho was 1960. And there were other movies in the 70s that built this premise, but the 80s was the heyday of slasher movies. It's really tough to do a tribute to slashers because, and I talked about this last week with Triggered, is slasher movies, they're not great films. I mean, from a writing standpoint, they're not the greatest movies ever made. They have relatively cardboard characters, and they gotta populate it with a lot of people so they can get killed, and they're usually cheesy and corny and follow a really standard formula. And so a tribute to them is really only going to appeal to somebody who is into slasher movies, which is a significant section of horror fans, but not exactly a significant section of movie-going fans. What this one does is it treads the line between horror and comedy in the sense that, I mean, certainly this premise is hilarious. You've got Vince Vaughn as this big, massive serial killer, and he switches bodies with this, you know, 5'5", cute blonde high school girl. And it gives Vince Vaughn a chance to not just be imposing, which he is, but to also be very funny, which he is. I mean, his roots are in comedy. But it also dives heavy into a slasher movie. It is violent. There are some crazy kills in this movie, and it is definitely R-rated, which is a step up from the Happy Death Day movies, which were both PG-13. So it's nice to see a violent, over-the-top, ridiculous slasher movie, but it's also very funny. And there's a long history in cinema of having funny horror movies. Horror and comedy cross all the time. I mean, Troma Films has made an entire career out of that. But even more high-level stuff, like Student Bodies from the 80s, Shaun of the Dead, even something like Scream. Scream is not a straightforward slasher movie. It's a parody of slasher movies. There's a lot of people who just watch it and they just take it for being the slice and dice movie that it is. But if you actually watch the movie, you can see Wes Craven, who's helped build the slasher genre, he's playing off of his greatest hits in a lot of ways. And that's what a Freaky does. So it totally holds up as a horror movie, but it's also a hilarious comedy as well. And a lot of it's because of Vince Vaughn, but also the other supporting characters. I mean, they fall into a lot of the modern cliches of a high school movie. Like, you know, got the girl and she's sort of the wallflower. You know, she's meant to be the final girl, but she's the first girl. Her friends are, she's got a gay friend, which is kind of a cliche in the modern horror movie today, and a black girl who's her friend. Again, you know, it's, I don't know how many times I've seen the main character have a black girlfriend and a gay friend. And I think that's deliberate with this because they said, hey, let's just, if we're going to go into the stereotype, you know, and we're going to go into the formula, let's dive in feet first. So I have to say I enjoyed this movie because of the fact it was able to straddle that line. And I think that R rating is going to help it, particularly this weekend, because the people who are going to go see this movie are going to want to see it because it's a slasher movie. I don't think it's necessarily going to draw the comedy crowd out, but at least your genre horror fans, you're going to get a straightforward violent slasher movie that also has some very funny moments. So I'm going to have to say that Freaky, I was looking forward to it, and it lived up to my expectations. I'm going to have to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is The Climb, also in theaters this week. We got a lot of things coming to theaters this week. That's probably why AMC stock is going up, even if the audience isn't. Two lifelong friends struggle to maintain their relationship, which is littered with betrayal and toxic behavior.
Mike, I'm getting married. How awesome is that? I can't wait to spend the rest of my life with her.
Kyle, I slept with her.
Kyle hates me.
He should hate you.
I know.
I'm a bad friend.
Oh my God. Mike, are you serious?
What you did to him was selfish. Kyle's selfless. He always thinks about other people first.
He's gotta go.
Yeah, he's gonna go tomorrow.
I mean, like, he's gotta go away. Like, not in our lives.
But he's my friend.
This is an American film, but it feels like a French film. And you'll understand that if you've watched enough French films. American films, even independent ones, tend to be a little more straightforward. They tend to have a little bit more, I guess you could say, intolerance for being betrayed. You see a movie like, and you heard it in the trailer where the guy's gonna come getting married. Oh, and I slept with your fiance. I've seen that kind of thing set up in a French movie where there's like, oh, well, it's okay. I had sex with your fiance. That tends to really be the end of relationships in an American cinema type thing. It's very hard to come back from that. And this sort of thing happens multiple times with these characters. Part of it is the one main character. There's two of them. There's the one who's getting married in that opening clip. And he's kind of the heel. He always forgives this guy, and he always has valued their friendship with them being together as people in a very platonic way, at least for him, maybe not the people he's dating. And he'll let almost anything go. And the thing is, the reality is there's truth in that, because I've known people who are like that, that there's no amount of abuse that somebody can heap upon them and then have them get rid of that person's relationship. Most people can get addicted to toxic relationships. So there's some real truth in that character, and there's some real truth in the character of the guy who just can't keep it in his pants. And the way the movie's structured, it has, like, I don't know, I forget how many, but four or five segments, and each one is like a snapshot of a certain time. Like, the one's a snapshot right before they are going to get married. Another one's a snapshot at Christmas several years later. Another is a snapshot at another wedding. And each one is framed often with a long take. So it's one of those movies where they throw the camera there and they just kind of watch the stuff. Almost, not quite cinema verite, because it is staged, but it's done a little more theatrically, where everybody's in the frame and they move around and then the camera moves around. There may be a handful of cuts, two or three cuts in any segment of the movie. And it's meant to examine these people's relationship. And I think there's a lot of people who love this movie. A lot of people are giving it a lot of praise. Go back to my talk about Echo Boomers and you're going to hear me say something very similar. I don't like these characters. There's some funny moments to it, and it's competently written, but I just did not like the character. I thought the characters, because they're in a toxic relationship. I'm like, I don't care. Oh, but this guy doesn't have any friends. That's his fault. You know, if you've ruined every relationship you've been, whether it's romantic or friendship, there is one consistent thing, and that's been you and all those relationships. Maybe you're the problem. And that's what I don't like about this movie, is it's trying to be like, oh yeah, you can still be friends. No, if you're going to sleep with my wife, I'm probably going to have an issue with you for the rest of your life. So that's why I didn't like it. I mean, yeah, there's truth to it, but I have a real problem liking a movie if I don't enjoy spending time with the characters, and they were either a jerk or a wimp. So I'm going to have to say The Climb kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Chick Fight and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Brides of Dracula and Bill and Ted Face the Music. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and finish up the theatrical reviews. These are all in theaters, I believe. But one more that is out in theaters, and that is Chick Fight. A middle-aged woman struggles to get her life together and ends up joining an elite female fight club.
Okay, you seem upset.
Well, my business is in the toilet. I don't have insurance.
Oh.
I can barely pay my bill. Today, my car got repossessed. Other than that, I'm amazing.
What is this place?
The answer to all your problems. Woo! This
is a shelter, a safe haven for women to come without societal judgment.
It would take a miracle worker to help me.
I think I know just the guy.
I want you to train me.
Train you to do what? Ride a bike?
I'm part of a fight club.
That sounds dangerous.
This movie stars Malin Ackerman, who is, and I say middle-aged because I believe she's in her early 40s. I mean, she looks good. I mean, she's a very attractive woman, but she's not like 22 anymore. And like one of her rivals in this little fight club is played by Bella Thorne, who, by the way, can I just rant about Bella Thorne really quickly? If there's anyone who's an actual actor, I'm not talking about like Kim Kardashian or something like that, but an actual actor in today's Hollywood society that is overrated more than Bella Thorne, I'd like to know. Because Bella Thorne, yes, she is an attractive woman. Guess what? That comes with youth. You're not doing anything special to be attractive and young and fit. I was attractive and young and fit when I was your age, and look what's going to happen to you. But no, I mean, it's just whenever somebody starts in a Disney show, they always have to do the Miley Cyrus thing. It's like, oh, I'm going to be a total slut about it now, and I'm just going to like just sex, 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 and tattoos and piercings. I'm going to be edgy, which really isn't edgy. It's just obnoxious. I much preferred the way Anne Hathaway did it, where she said, I'm going to do some grown-up movies. I might do a nude scene here or there, but I'm not going to be, you know, shoving my boobs in your face every time you get a chance. And that's the way I feel Bella Thorne is. Bella Thorne's like, oh, I'm so woke, and I understand. I am over Bella Thorne so much. Like, the last movie I saw her in that was decent was that first Babysitter movie. She was okay in that. The second Babysitter movie, she wasn't. She was actually quite terrible. But anyways, in this chick fight movie, Malin Ackerman's life is falling apart, and her friend takes her to this underground fight club that actually has a connection to her mother, who had passed away from cancer several years ago. It's her finding this bonding experience with these women, and she gets Alec Baldwin to train her. He's an old boxing coach, so she gets him to train her so she can actually fight better in the ring and prove herself. It's essentially Fight Club for girls without the subversive subtext that was in Fight Club. I mean, Fight Club has a lot to say about society, and it's layered, and this is very basic. It's about women who get in a ring and beat each other up. It ignores the fact that this kind of behavior would put people in the hospital and probably kill them. And I love how they're like, oh, it's for women who have had problems, who can have a safe space. I'm like, well, yeah, unless they've been abused. And this is probably not where you want to go if you've been abused, you know? So, you know, if you're in a three-way relationship with Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, this is probably not where you're going to go to get your therapy. It's an okay movie. I mean, once you get past the absurdity of the whole thing and the cartoon violence of beating each other to a pulp and the innate danger in all of that, you know, it's okay. It's sort of this awakening for this. It's like one of those, I call them a second coming of age movie or a coming of middle age movie where you know, she sort of gets her life on track. But I mean, once you get past all, it's a cute little movie. Malin Ackerman's fine in it. I think she carries it well. And I don't think anyone's taking the movie too seriously. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to jump into the home cinema roundup. I've got two spotlights today. The first one is on Scream Factory's release of The Brides of Dracula. A woman staying in a mysterious castle comes face to face with a vampire hiding as a trapped baron.
Listen to the beat of your heart, Marianne. You hear the beat of fear within you. Fear that will rise to a shattering crescendo of terror. You have strayed into a world of evil, where frightened people are held in the grip of unearthly horror. Beware of pity for the handsome prisoner in the castle Meister. Beware of love, for in your heart is only the pulsating throb of terror.
This was actually one of the first Hammer movies I ever saw on late night TV. And I didn't know anything about it. And I was probably a little bit young to really get it. Because, you know, this was in the 80s when I was looking for blood and guts and, you know, Friday the 13th type stuff. You know, I was a teenager at the time. And this has a little more nuance. It's gothic and it's from 1960. It's one of the string of vampire movies, in particular the Dracula movies that they made, but it doesn't have Christopher Lee in it. Instead of Christopher Lee, you've got David Peel playing Dracula, and it's about him trying to escape his imprisonment in a castle and building a cadre of brides to do his bidding and creating these female vampires. It also has Peter Cushing in it, and Peter Cushing's always great in these movies, and it's one of the more active Peter Cushing roles. I mean, it actually has a really kind of knockdown, drag-out fight scene, and it really has a great confrontation with Dracula, better than even something like Dracula, Prince of Darkness, which was a Christopher Lee one, which was a little bit dismissive of Dracula, especially near the end. But this is good. It's gorgeously shot. It's one of the higher budget movies with Technicolor and some really nice gothic sets and costumes. The new Blu-ray comes with a whole bunch of stuff. It has the full frame version of the movie along with new audio commentary and interviews with a bunch of people, either about people who were involved or the people who were involved. It also has some production stills and theatrical trailers. So it has some nice special features. A lot of the Hammer stuff that Shout Factory or Scream Factory has been putting together features a lot of great interstitial content that's nice to sort of wrap up to give you a history of the director of the movie, the studio itself, and as well as the production of the film. So I'm going to have to say The Brides of Dracula is totally worth checking out. I know it's after Halloween, but why not? I like horror movies. We can keep those going all year round. It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about on Blu-ray that is now available is Bill and Ted Face the Music. Bill S. Preston and Ted Theodore Logan must travel through space and time once again to find the secret to the song that will unite the universe.
Bill, Ted, enough of the delusions.
You didn't time travel.
And you didn't go to heaven and hell. Here's a real idea for you. Be role models to your daughters. Get real jobs.
A song created by Preston Logan, performed tonight, will save reality as we know it.
Oh. Dude, our dads are totally in trouble.
And you should help them out.
This, of course, had a well-known on-demand release. And it was also in theaters, but I heard it did like 10 times as well on demand as it did in theatrical release. And I think a lot of it is because the people who wanted to watch a Bill and Ted movie didn't want to have to go to the theaters to see it. Now you can get the physical disc, which you should like physical media because, look, they can always take the movie off their servers. They can't come to your house and take your Blu-ray. So I'm a huge fan of physical media. This movie itself is a lot of fun. It is way better than it has any business being. It's a little bit rocky in that first act, but the second act is better, and then the third act is great. They've got some fantastic characters. The daughters of them, the both of them are hilarious, and that's what makes me love the movie, is that Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter were generous enough to step back and let other people take the spotlight, in particular their daughters, which are going through a similar story that they went through in the first movie while all this other crazy stuff is happening. Plus, they have this great bit with this robot that's chasing him, but then it starts to feel guilty about the things that it's doing. This really is a fun movie, and I like the fact also that Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves acknowledge the fact that they're old men now. I mean, they're in their 50s. So they can't quite do the kids outside the Circle K that they did in the first film. And there's an acknowledgement to that. And I loved it. And I thought this movie was exactly what we needed in the middle of a pandemic. And we're still in the middle of a pandemic. Yeah, after such a contentious election and continued angst in the political realm, let's get a movie like Bill and Ted Face the Music, and that's a movie that can truly unite America, I believe. So the special features on here are a little bit thin. There's a Comic-Con panel, the virtual Comic-Con panel, because they didn't actually go to Comic-Con this year, and it's moderated by Kevin Smith, who does a better job moderating it than he did making the movie I talked about last week. And there's a whole bunch of like little short clips, these promos pieces that went through social media. The biggest meat is the Comic-Con panel where they talk to all the different people involved. But ultimately, the reason to get this is for the movie, because it totally rocks and it's totally excellent.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray this week are A Rainy Day in New York, Amazon Women on the Moon, the special edition, Monty Python's Flying Circus, the complete series, and Play Misty for Me special edition. And that is it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about the Lego Star Wars holiday special and Vanguard. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.